freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Beard has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com as well. Hope you're having a good day. Danny O'Neill is in for Brock today. Hi, buddy.
I'm mulletless today.
Yeah, well, I liked you yesterday with the mullet. That was a good look for you.
Do you think I could have pulled that off?
Yeah.
You think I could have long hair?
Yes.
Party in the back,
yes.
Business up front.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially if it was blonde like that.
Yeah.
It kind of it made you look younger. I thought it was a nice look for
really?
You. Yeah. It sort of took a few years off of you. It was great. Yeah, it was very very youth-inspiring.
Yeah, people seem to react well to it.
What a nice win for the Mariners yesterday, man. It's just one of those ones you have to have. Those ones that you need to bank. That's how I look at a lot of these wins against teams like the Rays. You gotta bank some of these wins. And yesterday was a good one to bank with some of the difficulty that I think is ahead of them.
Are they padding their record in one-run
yes,
games now?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, that's what they did yesterday.
Like, Colomé was like, they're like, look, I know we could use you getting a little bit of work. Make it interesting. Like, make it interesting. We've shown that we've got a knack for winning these close games.
Yeah, Seager make a nice play or something. Like, just get it. Make sure that that everybody sweats.
Does Johnny Field score?
I went back and watched that like five times because I was curious about it. I was thinking about the play that Seager made a couple of years ago against the Angels, right? With a man on second, Diaz was at the plate. There was a smash down the line, and he made the great play, popped up. And he kind of had a choice as to whether to throw it or not. And in that case, if he had thrown it, I think it was Trout who was coming around, was going to score. Might have been somebody else, I forget. But whoever it was definitely going to score on that play because he had already basically rounded the bag. And if it's late, if anything, he scores. If game is over, you lose. This was not that spot. I thought what I saw yesterday was a really nice play, and I think Field was stopping at third.
I'll say
now,
this.
If he overthrows him, obviously he scores.
I'll say this. I love the way Adrian Beltre played third base. Like, Adrian Beltre is one of my favorite players to watch, and Adrian Beltre is an all-time great defensive third baseman. His best move was coming in and barehanding a slow roller and being able to throw on the run.
Yeah, he's nasty.
He does it better than anybody else, and anybody who would try to bunt with him, I was like, did you not get the memo? Like, did you not get the memo that you cannot bunt against Adrian Beltre and his ability to throw? Kyle Seager kind of going back toward the line, that diving play. He's as good at that as Adrian Beltre is at charging a ball. He's as good at that. He's unbelievable.
The stretch and the pitch. Robertson is swinging a ground ball. Third baseline. Back at it by Seager. Long throw and a hop to first, and it's in time to get Robertson, and the ball game is over. Mariners hang on and win it tonight. A score of 5-4. Holy smokes, what a play by Kyle Seager, deep behind the bag at third. A perfect one-hop strike into Ryan Healy for the out on Robertson for the final out of the ball game, and the Mariners win it 5-4. They take the opening game of this four-game series.
This is a good one, man. These are the wins you just bank because you're gonna finish up here in Tampa. You come home, obviously, for a really challenging homestand against the Angels and the Red Sox. You go back on the road. You got to see the Red Sox again. You got to see the Yankees. You're going to see Baltimore, but you're going to see them after you've been beat up a little bit by the Red Sox and Yankees. And, you know, you're not going to continue to get the kind of starts they've had over and over again against some of the better teams in the game. In their last four games, their starters have gone 8 innings, 7 2/3 innings, 4 from Wade LeBlanc, and then 8-plus from Leak yesterday. Okay? In today's version of baseball, that's nuts. In today's version of baseball, where you're just trying to get through that order twice, and in all likelihood, your crazy middle relievers are going to come in by the sixth inning, maybe the seventh, to go through those kind of numbers is fantastic, and it really saves, obviously, a bullpen that can get beat up quickly and get, you know, the longer you have to use them, the more you're using guys you don't really want to, and you're elevating their leverage situation. So all of these things contribute not only to the win, but to wins down the line as you get your guys fresh. I just can't believe this rotation is capable of it. And it wasn't supposed to be this way. Everybody, every single person other than Jerry DePoto and apparently Scott Service looked at this rotation before the year began, shrugged their shoulders and said, I don't see it. And so far, they're really good. In the last month, they've been better than the Astros. I mean, Marco Gonzalez has been great. Mike Leake has been great. Wade LeBlanc, who joined them late, has been, at the very least, very good and at times great. James Paxton, obviously, has been great. Felix Hernandez has been the weak link. But this was not supposed to be this way, Danny.
First, they've been healthy. And that's the one thing. I don't think they have the starting pitching depth. I remember last year when
they have no starting pitching depth.
Yeah, last year when it started, they're like, "Hey, we think we've got nine capable pitchers. You need that in a season." They don't have depth.
Do you think that those two things are related? That if you have depth, you'll be forced to use it, and if you don't have depth, then your guys will stay healthy.
Well, I think they looked at it and said, "Well, man, we plan for every contingency, and you saw where that got us. Forget planning.
Exactly.
We're gonna get five guys, maybe five and a half, depending on how much you count Erasmo Ramirez. Like, and we're just gonna go with it because last year, covering our butt in every way we could conceive of.
Sure.
Well, that didn't stop a historical rash of injuries. The effectiveness of this group, though. And it's interesting the way it has happened because there is an obsession with velocity in the game. That's how pitchers are measured. And there's a good reason for it because velocity works. When everybody talks about, and I feel that anybody that watches the game, and broadcasters and writers talk about the game the way it is today, and they say it as if there's some sort of blight that's happening on the game and all of a sudden nobody knows how to make contact and hitters can't beat shifts, like all of those different things. Velocity works. Velocity is also extremely expensive, and when you inherit the farm system that Jerry DePoto did, and you inherit some of the contracts he has, you can't go out and spend for velocity. You have to find different ways to do it, and the number one thing that you should be encouraged about as a Mariner fan is the way that they've found value in starting.
Yeah, if everything in baseball is about finding those market inefficiencies and trying to exploit them, Jerry did. He was on with you guys on Tuesday for the Jerry DePoto show and talked about that value.
It's actually something that we did intentionally. And it's not like we went out and said, let's find guys who don't throw hard. Obviously, we like guys who throw hard as much as the next team. But as I've shared with you guys, when you get the accomplished high velocity pitcher who has multiple pitches, who throws strikes, they're really hard to procure. You can't access that pitcher, but you might be able to find somebody who fits for you in a slightly different mold.
I might even go beyond this, Danny, and say that the deals he made for Marco and for Leake are even better than that. Not only does he find those guys that are, there's a market inefficiency, I think you can make an argument that in some way those guys are better than the flamethrowers, because you sort of have to use that old Jamie Moyer theory of, hey, the harder they're trying to swing, the more I tried to throw slowly, and slower I threw. And in a league where everybody is home run happy and the uppercut swings and everything going on, yeah, maybe throwing slower and slower like Wade LeBlanc has and like Marco, I mean, that may actually be an advantage to show somebody a completely different look than every other team is showing them.
I like that idea because it means the game has changed so much that Wade LeBlanc has become valuable.
Yes, that's exactly right.
That it's an asset to have Wade LeBlanc because he's got an 86-mile-an-hour fastball.
Yeah, nobody can hit it. Yeah. They're too busy gearing up for 90.
Well, they see the 86, and they're like, man, okay, I got to be ready for that change.
Swing
I've got
to
be ready for that change. And then he actually takes a little more off of it. And, oh, my gosh, he could go even slower.
Not only did he trade for those guys, but he traded for guys who were really under reasonable cost and team control. And I don't want to spend forever talking about dorky things like that. But he's got Leake for two more years after this one at $11 million a year and an option for a third year after that. He's got Gonzalez, who's making the league minimum and is under control like forever. He's got Paxton, who's still under reasonable money, only $5 million this year, and they get him for two more years after this. So you don't need to start thinking about dealing him. And then obviously Felix is in the last year of his deal, or is about to be in the last year of his deal, which is great because it actually gives you some financial flexibility with him after this season. So I don't know. I really think that Jerry gets a lot of credit for the Haniger-Segura deal because it's sort of franchise-changing with a couple of guys who may be all-stars. Those two deals he made for pitchers, knowing that the market was going to be crazy for them in the offseason, I think they're actually combined my favorite deals he's made because I didn't think they were good at the time. I thought at best he was getting international slot money for Mike Leake and Marco looked like a bad deal for a good prospect. And they look like the two most brilliant things he's done.
Can you package all three of those deals together? And this would be the reason that I would say that. Taiwan Walker was the piece that you gave up to get Segura and Haniger. And Taiwan Walker is the starting pitcher who throws hard. And that in some ways, the value that is placed on velocity in baseball allowed you to get Segura, who had been an all-star, and Haniger, who was a toolsy prospect That was the adjective that Jerry DePoto hung on him. And then you look at turn around and go get two guys who, because they didn't have velocity, weren't coveted. And that you get, if you view those deals in total,
makes sense.
You kind of see the way that he recognizes.
If you do it, though, you've got to, if you're going to say toolsy prospect, you have to start saying that the pitchers he likes have a lot of pitchability. If you're going to go with toolsy prospects, you've got to say that Marco and Leake both have a lot of pitchability.
I would also like to point out when Jerry says access, it's like a market. It's an opportunity to access pitching. This is the July is one of the few times a year you can access.
Let's access need to know.
Need to know. The voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know.
Well, Danny and I may have had a dork fest for the first 10 minutes of this show, but the Mariners hang on to beat the Rays 5-4 last night in Tampa, back on pace for 102 wins. If they go 50-50 with 100 games left to play now, they will finish with 89 wins. That's the situation that they've put themselves in. Pretty impressive. Took a 5-1 lead into the ninth. Things did get a little interesting because Alex Colomé allowed a bases-clearing double to bring Tampa within a single run, but he got himself out of that jam with a ground ball. Nice home run for Mitch Haniger. Nice home run for Denard Span. And just good heads-up base running for Gene Segura, who once again had two more hits in the game, continues to lead the league in multi-hit games.
Gene Segura is the most maddening base runner for me. He drives me nuts. He's a terrible base runner. And then he does something really heads-up. The number of thrown out on the base paths like a nincompoop that he has at least four this year. I love that. Mitch Haniger better be an all-star. Mitch Haniger better be an all-star. With 13 home runs and what he's done, if he's not on there, people need to recalibrate exactly what they're doing. And I just look at the three runs that Alex Colomé allowed. They needed a 19th one-run win this year. They just needed to get to their 19th one-run win, so they just padding the stats.
On a team that includes Kyle Seager, Gene Segura is the base runner that drives you most
yes.
nuts?
Wow. It's not close.
All right.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Seahawks wrapped up their organized team activity schedule yesterday in Renton. Next up for them will be mini camp next week. Pete Carroll saying he expects everyone in attendance for that, including Earl Thomas, when they start on June 12th. We'll see. I don't know that I'd be holding my breath for Earl to show up. Maybe he does, but if you asked me to put a bet on it one way or another, I would bet that he does not, and that this is going to be the beginning of a problem between the Seahawks and their safety. OTAs were good, though. I know people get excited about the whole voluntary thing. We don't have to argue about it, but if you're out of practice and you saw them, and yes, that's what it is, practice, there's no doubt Chris Carson was the guy who stood out. He's the guy Pete Carroll mentioned yesterday. And for a team that truly wants to run the ball and get back to that identity, that seems like pretty good news.
Sounds like he's 10 pounds heavier.
Yeah, he said that to us.
He was not lacking when it came to the strength to begin
with.
He's
so ripped.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him. A little bit of a concern that Deion Jordan, as Mike, you noticed it a couple weeks ago, where he wasn't doing much, and you're kind of looking around, and he's got a troublesome knee, and he had a procedure.
He had a big brace on that thing.
A little something to... That's a little worrisome, if only because you don't have the depth at pass rusher that you had before. I think whether Earl's here or not next week will be a very important moment, not so much publicly, but behind the scenes. How does the franchise handle this? How do the Seahawks handle this if he's actually not there when he's required to be? Because I think they've got an opportunity to send a pretty clear message that the way things have operated the past couple years are going to change going forward. I'll be interested to see what happens.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, the Stanley Cup has been awarded. The Washington Capitals take the series 4-1, and they are Stanley Cup champions after they beat the Golden Knights last night and did it in Vegas. What a cool place to win. If you're going to win on the road, why not win it in Vegas? Take the cup right through the lobby of MGM Grand, go right to Hakkasan or wherever they went, and party the night away with Alex Ovechkin, who must have dropped 5 F-bombs as soon as the thing ended, all on NBC or NBC Sports. He was so pumped. What a great series, man. A great run for the Las Vegas Knights. In the long run, this will be the best thing for their fans. It would be horrible to have your first year be the best and have it all be downhill from there. So good for them. They get to continue to quest for the cup. And good for the Capitals fans who have waited forever. The last time they were in the Stanley Cup Finals, it was only the goalie, Olaf Kolzig, who was their goalie. I'm told he was in the building last night. I saw a tweet about it, and he got to hold the cup for a little while as well. So just an all-around great night last night for the NHL.
Feel good for Washington fans?
I don't really care about them one way or another.
It's a group. It's a pretty big fan base in that city. Yeah. But they are kind of forgotten. It's the first championship for that city since the Washington Epithets.
They're like Atlanta. I don't care.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not a big Washington.
Well, they've got a lot deeper history than Atlanta does. I was excited to see that. And you're right. For Las Vegas, how can you know and truly enjoy the sweet if you've never tasted the sour? You need pain. You need pain as a fan base to really appreciate what goes on there. And if in your first season in one of the major sports leagues, you won that
be
trophy.
Terrible.
Yeah, it would set a terrible precedent.
All right. There you go. Three things you need to know every single day. We do that at 7:10. Danny O'Neill from Danny David Moore in here for Brock today. Let's see. A lot of text messages coming in. It makes sense, Danny. Segura's been on base a lot more than Kyle this year. That's
here's
why he's had chances to annoy you.
No, here's the thing. There's no chance for Kyle Seager to be a good base runner. Gene Segura should be a good base runner.
Yeah, but Kyle Seager should be immobile.
Hold on. Kyle Seager, there's no chance for him to be a good base runner.
Yes, there is.
Segura.
Why?
No, because he's so slow.
But that's the problem.
But he can still be smart.
Yeah. No, okay. There's tons of good base runners who are slow. Mike Zunino's a good base runner.
Segura, sure. That's fine. But the upside of that, the benefit of that, Segura gets stolen bases. Segura has all the signs of being, and he's a terrible base runner.
He doesn't have great instincts, but Kyle Seager thinks he's fast, which is worse.
Yadier Molina, I watched him do a late steal this year. Like, he can still steal bases.
You're on this side, too, that Kyle Seager is a worse base,
is
a worse base runner than Gene Segura.
He really is.
Gene Segura is the worst base runner on this team.
Oh, my God. Let's talk to the
professor. Be better.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Brought to you by Divorce Lawyers from N.com.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
All right, were you out there yesterday for the last OTA? All right, so what do we need to know? We know, first of all, that Deion Jordan, who's supposed to be a starting defensive end for this group, had minor knee surgery this offseason. What does minor mean?
Well, minor, I guess, when you say 6 to 8 weeks, it's a little bit more than minor, but I think he's pretty well maybe through that because he hasn't done anything, at least in the open sessions that we were able to see. He was always standing on the side. So you have to figure that if the surgery came, say, in late April, then he's got to be pretty much through this and should be ready for training camp. So it's a concern because, again, what you're looking at with Frank Clark not there is that Brandon Jackson starting and you've got a rookie, Jacob Martin, starting. And so you're down your top four defensive ends, and that's got to be a concern.
What's your history with these cleanup procedures on knees? I mean, one side of me says, well, if they didn't need to do it, that would be better. The other side of me says, well, they did it in the offseason. That means he could have played through it, but they think this will actually make him even healthier next year. What's your history with these cleanup procedures?
Well, the history is usually when you get to the end of the season and you need a surgery, you get a surgery. Then you can be ready for the OTAs and all those things. And so my guess is he thought he was going to be okay, but it just didn't get okay. And so then he had to have the procedure that now takes him out through the OTAs. It's one of those things where it's like, okay, you hope to get through without the surgery, but the hope ends and then you have to have it. But, the big thing is being ready for training camp and then being ready for the season.
All the signs are on the wall here of Deion Jordan having a really problematic knee. Mm-hmm. The fact that he missed half of last season, that they were unsure about that, that's there. John, what does your crystal ball tell you about Earl Thomas next week? Do you think he's there?
I give it maybe a 50% chance. I think all I know is you talk to the other defensive backs, and those that stay in touch with him basically say that he is going to be there at the appropriate time. I know that's what Bradley McDougal said, that he'll be there at the appropriate time, and I think next week can be the appropriate time. And so I would anticipate without any question you'll see Frank Clark there. You know that Byron Maxwell, why he's missing, I have no idea, probably because of the low salary he was able to take, but he'll be there because right now he's penciled in for a starting job. But I do think that 50-50 chance that Earl's going to be there.
All right, two comments. First of all, I would pencil him out for a starting job if I were Pete Carroll. Oh, you don't want to show up to OTAs? Cool. Somebody else is going to start, at least at the beginning, and you have an opportunity to earn your way back in there. But when the reps first come at the beginning of mandatory minicamp, I would have one of the guys who was there take those first team reps. And maybe you find your way back in, but you don't just get to skip voluntary work. That's fine. You don't have to be here. But the consequence for it is that somebody else might be starting when you get back, don't you think?
I don't think it'd be too drastic.
All right. I don't think so, because I think you'd absolutely, if he's good enough, he'll find his way back in there. And if not, you send a message that you just don't get to skip voluntary workouts like they're nothing. Those are practices. Second of all, John, I'm holding your feet to the fire. 50-50
By the way, are you mentioning Tom Brady?
No, but I mean, maybe.
It's the same thing.
If I'm Bill Belichick, I'd give the first team reps at the beginning to somebody else. Sure. Now, of course, Brady's going to end up taking the job. I'm not saying I'm going to start that other player. But, yeah, if you don't want to show up for voluntary workouts, cool. Then somebody else is going to start in your place when you first come back.
Too drastic.
All right. I got to put you on the spot. 50-50 doesn't cut it. Does Earl Thomas show up, yes or no?
I'd lean toward yes.
Okay. 51%.
51-49. Yes.
51-49. Hey, I saw there was a PED suspension coming here in the NFL. It didn't get plastered all over the news the way even a minor one would in football, but in baseball. But Julian Edelman's a pretty big name, and he's going to go down for 4 games.
Oh, yeah. No, in fact, that broke during the show and teased it, showed how big it is, because now with Danny Amendola gone, that whole receiving core has been revamped. I mean, they've got Kenny Britt now maybe having to play, and that's not going to be a good thing. So that's a big setback for them. You know, he's coming back from injury. Obviously, whatever he was doing in the injury, some PED that he took was detected, and now he's out for 4 games. And so, you know, the troubled offseason of the Patriots continues.
John, doesn't Julian work out with Tom Brady's guru, the snake oil
Alex
salesman?
Guerrero, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So
I think there's a limited chance that Guerrero gets back in the building.
Wait, not the same Tom Brady whose name was in Anderson's black book, the guy from the Balco scandal. Not that Tom Brady, right?
Wait, I didn't know that.
His name was in his black book.
Really?
Sure.
Tom Brady?
Yeah, nothing ever came of it.
Did you know that Dave Wyman once met with the Balco founder?
I did know that.
Victor Conte.
Yeah, this was the trainer guy, though. Was it Anderson? What's the guy's name who went to
Greg
jail?
Greg Anderson?
Greg Anderson. Yeah, he had Brady's number right in his black book. How about a little Friday wild card for you, John?
Time now for the wild card.
Wild card.
Mr. Professor Clayton?
Yes.
It's time for Fan Fiction Friday.
Howdy's got a
John
new haircut,
Clayton is
too.
A high school cafeteria chef who constantly gets ridiculed by the snarky drama kids. One day, however, the meanest theater geek played by Ethan Hawke is found dead in a pool, and everyone assumes that Clayton did it. Watch as Clayton tries to clear his name with the help of the school's most unpopular librarian played by Robert Downey Jr., while the next meanest theater geek, Boy Howdy, attempts to convict Clayton before the investigation is even complete. Who killed Ethan Hawke, and will Clayton get the blame?
Yeah, well, there's no reason for me. I'm just there cooking, so it's like I'm not going to be the one that's going to be indicted or anything of that nature just because I'm not that good of a cook. And so that's probably one of the reasons I don't cook, because I would worry that I would cause somebody to pass away.
Right.
I think that I've got to be clear, because what's the motive? I have no motive in this.
You feel like you could play a high school kid? Does that seem like a good...
I think Boy Howdy could probably play a high school kid.
How come you excluded yourself from this?
No, what about Clayton? I said
he's the high school cafeteria chef.
He's the chef. Clayton, you've just been teased. You've reached your breaking point because all these mean kids have been picking on you.
I missed that.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah. What the heck? It's like, but I wasn't going to wipe it out.
Can Ethan Hawke still play a high school kid?
I kind of like the idea of the professor getting fired up and start slinging sloppy Joe meat at people, just like catapult style with the spoon.
John, what was your favorite high school cafeteria food? Like, which day would get you kind of psyched?
Probably Hamburg Day.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Gotta go chicken nuggets, I think, for that.
Chicken nuggets were good. Yeah, that was
chicken nugget day is about as good as a cafeteria can do.
Pizza's the worst.
Yeah,
they're awful.
Cafeteria pizza.
Oh, because like the circle.
Oh, yeah, those are awful. Bad.
I think that, by the way, I think it was the pizza that killed Ethan.
It may very well have been. Poor Ethan Hawke. All right, John, thank you. We'll talk to you on Monday. Have a good weekend.
Okay. Thanks.
All right, John, of course, his show will be today at 10 o'clock. No Danny David Moore, so you won't hear him, but generally you do at 4 o'clock with Danny David Moore every single day. All right, a bunch of things coming in here. We got a bunch of people who were agreeing with you, others who were saying it's neither of those two guys. Who else did they say was a worse
Gamble,
base runner?
Gamble. Gamble's not good.
He's not good either.
Gamble's problem, though, is basically his decision to go from second to third on ground balls to the left side of the infield.
Yeah.
Like, that was terrible.
That's not a good thing.
Segura has all the ingredients for being a good base runner if you just extract his head from his posterior.
Some people here are saying that Heredia is a bad base runner. I would totally disagree. I think
Heredia's a
very good base runner, and I know he's been thrown out a few times. Don't confuse being thrown out with being a bad
base
runner.
He's just bad at stealing bases because he does
get thrown
out when he steals.
He's not a good base stealer, but he's a good base runner, I would say. I think
Service said he also struggles with sliding.
Heredia does?
Yes, and he said that you can't really work on that.
So did Mark Sanchez. Do you remember when they brought in
Joe Girardi
to show him how to slide?
Cattell Marte, he said, also had problems. So they had to take him out behind center field. They have this patch of grass.
They take him out to the pasture behind center field?
Wet it down and practice sliding in center field.
As opposed to Segura, who just come in head first to go to the
You can listen to the show here in the 710 Sports app. It is driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Something spectacular happened last night. We must address it next. I'm Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
Off the face off, the Capitals have won it! The capital of the country is the capital of the hockey playoffs! They rush out onto the ice to congratulate Braden Holtby. The Washington Capitals, for the first time in their 44-year history, are the Stanley Cup champions!
What a night, man. What a night as we get ready to have hockey here in just a couple seasons. It was fantastic to watch that last night. Cap's been forever, and since Washington has won a championship since, the football team won it in 1992, is that right? So it's been an incredibly long time for that fan base. The Caps, of course, had never won a franchise just littered with disappointing finishes and good teams that found ways to lose, usually to Pittsburgh, over the course of the last decade or so. But to see them win last night, and any time the Stanley Cup is awarded, Danny, I find myself thinking there are just so many cool things to that night, and Danny O'Neill's in for Brock today. I've been there. I've been in the building when the cup has been given out. It is a tremendous moment. The awe and respect and admiration that everybody has, not just for the team that has won, but for the entity of the cup, is really cool. Both the people in the crowd and the folks on the ice. It's amazing. The cup is different from all of the other trophies in sports. It just is.
It's the best trophy in all the sports. I know the Lombardi Trophy and everybody looks at it, but you don't really think about the player holding the Lombardi Trophy in the same way you do with the... It's the one trophy that, after the game's over, guys are still in their uniforms skating around holding it up, and it's big and it's massive. It's a cool trophy.
It is.
And
the reverence they have for it is incredible. I mean, when it comes out and makes an appearance at the Eastern and Western Conference Finals, the guys won't touch it. They don't want their picture taken with it. They don't want any part of that thing. They, like, sort of begrudgingly go near it. But the other trophy, meaning the Eastern and Western Conference, like, they don't want any part of that thing. They're like, yeah, okay, that's cool, but I'm going to wait for the cup. The cup is the thing that they're actually invested in. And so
hockey's playoff traditions are the coolest. Look, hockey has the worst smelling equipment. We talked about this a little bit
really
before
bad.
The show. Hockey equipment smells like a dead body.
Well, because there's the most of it, right? Like,
it's
you wear
also,
the most equipment.
It's the gloves. It's football has bad smelling equipment, but it doesn't have the gloves. I've been in a lot of, my high school, a big hockey team, and it's the thing that truly takes it from bad smelling to, like, warm death are the gloves. Once you get those gloves off, the smell.
Why?
It's hard to dry them out.
Hand sweat smellier than all
No,
other
it's just really
sweat?
Hard to dry it out because it's completely contained. Like all the other pads, you can air out.
There's a lot of places for that stink to hide.
That's right. There's no way to really air out a hockey glove, and so it just stinks to holy whatever.
Anybody who's had smelly ski equipment, which I grew up skiing. So it's the same principle, which is that you need something really warm and insulating because you're playing on frozen water, but you're going to sweat into it profusely, and it's got nowhere to go because of the insulating properties of your equipment. My friend Jamie played hockey in Connecticut when I worked there at ESPN.com, and he would warm up his hockey equipment by putting hair dryers into the gloves.
Let me ask again. Why?
Because he wanted to warm it up.
I'm trying to learn hockey. I
so
don't understand.
So it would be cold and wet. Yeah. Well, it's probably still wet.
In snowboarding, you wear, like, the liners. You'd think that they'd have, like, some glove liners that they could remove,
man,
and then wash.
I've
like,
never
come
found
on,
anything
people.
That
Let's
makes
go.
It smell good. But the things that are great about it, and once you get to last night, you get the passion and intensity, obviously, of the game. But once it ends, you get the handshake lines, which is an amazing sports tradition, and even better after the Stanley Cup final. You have all of their reverence for the cup. You've got the order that they each get to raise it. And one of the little hidden cool things in the NFL and in Major League Baseball, et cetera, when they give out the championship trophy, it goes first to the coach or to the GM or the owner or somebody like that. In hockey, it goes to the captain. And that means such a cool thing in hockey. The captain has, there's such reverence for that position. And then everybody lines up after the captain in the right order. I don't know how they know the right order. I don't know how they know which veteran gets to go next and who deserves to be, but they always seem to know the exact right order, and it makes perfect sense who gets the cup. You get these great interviews. Every one of them's a good dude after the game, and last night was no exception. If you stuck around to watch some of the interviews after the game, there were a bunch that were very cool. None better than TJ Oshie, though, who is a local guy, grew up here in Washington, and unfortunately his dad has Alzheimer's, was there yesterday. Here was TJ Oshie talking about his relationship with his dad.
My dad, He doesn't remember a lot of stuff.
These days, he remembers enough. But I tell you what, he's here tonight. I don't know where he's at. But this one will stick with him forever. You can guarantee that.
That is so awesome. And his dad did end up coming back down onto the ice later. There's a good shot of him with his dad holding the cup. It just, there's a lot of cool traditions around that thing, Danny.
The handshake line at the end, we don't spend enough time talking about sportsmanship and what truly being a good sport means. The handshake line in hockey embodies it. There are moments at the end of a basketball series where guys will embrace and really express their admiration for each other. But the fact that hockey players spend an entire series trying to beat the living heck out of each other, and then at the end of it, everybody gets in a line and has an earnest moment, it's truly one of the things that makes me feel...
Even with the guys you hate, because there are feuds that will go on a lot longer than just a playoff series. I mean, I've seen players who get mad at another player, and they can't do anything about it really in the playoff series because it's too important. And the next year, in game one between those two teams, they'll go at it again. They'll beat the heck out of them.
But there's
but you still show up for that playoff. You still show up for that line, for that handshake
there's
line.
There's an acknowledgement of what the other person has earned from you, which is the respect that's there.
Mm.
The second thing that I want to say about hockey is that they really get, being a captain means something. Who's the captain of the Mariners team? They don't even have one as far as I know.
Yeah, a lot of baseball teams don't.
The Seahawks, Russell Wilson's been the captain, but it's not really this. Being the captain of a hockey team really means something. I'm reading a book called The Captain Class right now. It's by a guy named Sam Walker, who's a Wall Street Journal. And it's a look at the all-time great teams over the past 100 years. So there's like 12. And each one of them is embodied by having a captain. A person that really does, they do the dirty work. Sometimes they're a ruthlessly competitive player. Being a captain means something. And Ovechkin is the first Russian to be the captain of a Stanley Cup champion.
That's true?
Yes, correct.
And I think because it was Lidstrom.
Yeah.
Lidstrom was the captain. He was the first like European-trained player to be the captain.
My mind went to those Detroit teams, but yeah, Lidstrom's not from Russia. So yeah, I mean, it makes sense that he would be. He was pretty excited after the game.
Beginning of the year, I said we're not going to suck, and you know, we win the Stanley Cup. So it's all matters. We won it, and it doesn't matter how we play, what happened before, we just win it.
How pumped was Ovechkin after the game? As soon as he was just running around with the cup and just...
Toothless grin.
Oh, my God. How many times did he swear? Like, it was just awesome listening to him and seeing him. Just, you know, years of frustration. He's been one of the best players in hockey for his entire career. And finally was able to break through against Pittsburgh and then ends up winning the cup after
Full disclosure, I was trying to have a late dinner during that, and they were showing him, and he was all sweaty and toothless, and honestly, I had to change the channel. I can't eat. Like, this is too much.
That's terrible.
Knowing how much he stinks, sorry, Lydia, but yeah, that kind of compounded.
I was just going to say, to your guys' point about the sportsmanship, Salk, you made this point a couple weeks ago when we were talking to hockey, that it's the best team sport in your mind and how there's sort of a selfless nature. And so when it comes to like thinking about your team, valuing team over individual, I think that's a huge part of it too, when you can get over your ego and shake a guy's hand because you're thinking about your team as opposed to
I think hockey
yourself.
Has the best team culture more than any other team. And I think you can make really good arguments for other sports being good team sports, but the team culture that you tend to find in hockey is really incredible. And it's obviously no better on display than after a Stanley Cup.
There's season, a great article up at ESPN.com, Emily Kaplan, who covers it, the NHL for them. It's called Why Hockey Players Don't Say I, and you should take a quick read about it. It's really
the only time they say I is in the middle of the organization or the franchise, which they seem to both say after every game when they're asked. All right, let's finish this up. That was a lot of fun, man. It was a lot of fun last night. We're just a couple of years from getting to watch this great sport here in Seattle. I cannot wait for October 2020 when this whole thing gets going here. It's going to be fantastic. And for those of you who didn't get a chance to watch, I hope you will next year, knowing that this thing is coming. I hope you just start watching a team, get to know the players, get to know the game, learn about icing and offsides and tripping and holding and everything else that goes on in hockey, because I promise you're not going to be disappointed. All right, coming up next, it's Dual Coors Light's Blue 42. Danny is in to answer a few questions all about OTAs, and I may switch one up on him. A wild card for you, Danny, next. I'm Brock and Salk.
On the streets of Miami, speed is the law. So when a corn dog goes after the wrong girl,
oh, heartburn!
One man will bring her Tums Ultra Strength.
I'm on my way.
Don't get wrecked by heartburn. Nothing works faster than Tums.
Your mustard's fast, but my Tums are faster.
And with Tums on the go rolls, it's never been easier to leave heartburn behind.
You did it.
Yeah. You gonna finish that corn dog?
Tums Ultra Strength, available in a store near you.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're gonna go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, half back, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right, Coors Light's Blue 42. What does that mean? Three good football questions, usually for Brock. Today, though, for Danny O'Neill, who is sitting in. So, Danny, are you prepared?
I am.
All right, question number one. Is Shaquille Griffin ready to make the start at left cornerback? He'll be switching from right to left, the more important spot in the Seahawks scheme. Is he ready?
Yes, he is. And actually, on my list of worries about Seattle's defense, this is probably at least number 14. I feel as certain about Shaquille Griffin being a really good corner and being a potential Pro Bowler as I do about anything, any of their young players. I was really impressed with how he played last season. I think he is someone who can be physical and get up into the ball. He's bigger than people think. I really like Shaquille Griffin as a player.
Yeah, Pete Carroll, by the way, agrees with you. He likes him too.
It just depends on the guys. And we started early, and so, we thought that, we had to wait and see. Physically, it was no problem. He had played back and forth in earlier years. His mentality about it was fine. He was wide open to it. So that's most of it. You know, if a guy feels uncomfortable and he's telling you he's feeling uncomfortable, then he is. You know, and he never balked at it at all. And there's no signs of it, any evidence at all that's going to be a problem.
I wonder if he'll get thrown at more or less now that he's there. I guess we'll wait and see. Question number two. Will Earl Thomas show up at minicamp?
I don't think he's showing.
All right, if he doesn't show up at minicamp, how should the Seahawks handle it?
I think they should tell him, if you're not there when training camp starts, we're going to franchise tag you. If you're not there when training camp begins, we are going to plan to use the franchise tag on you after the season for 2019, and you're not going to be an unrestricted free agent. And you can either choose to accept our one-year deal, or you can sort of sit and wait, and we'll go through this all again next year. But if you're going to hold our feet to the fire, we're going to hold your feet to the fire.
So there needs to be a level of... Because Brock was saying that they really needed to get tough with him, bench him or something like that. I mean,
no, I think you tell him he's still earning... It's not an unfair salary what he's earning. He's not like a rookie who's a Pro Bowler who's going to play for $1.5 million right. And wants... He's getting one of the top salaries at his position, and his big payday is not going to come right now. And if he's going to say, I want it now, and if I don't get it now, I'm not going to show up and I'm going to compromise your season, then we say, okay, we're going to compromise your free agency a year from now.
I still try to trade him. Question number three. Danny, you got to watch a lot of OTAs. Which player made the single biggest impression on you?
I spent the most time watching Jermaine Ifedi. I think the player who made the biggest impression on me, though, was Ethan Posick. I think Posick looks bigger. I'm really encouraged by the way Posick played last year. I thought he was really good. And I think he's got a mean streak, and I think you combine him and Justin Britt as well as Dwayne Brown, and you've got a really center to left tackle is really well set. I was really impressed with Ethan Posick.
All right, there you go. That's today's Coors Light's Blue 42. I would have said Michael Dixon, but that's just me. That guy makes an incredible impression. He's just a punter, but he's fascinating to watch.
Do you think that if we were able to take away who was kicking it and you didn't know who was punting the ball, you would tell the difference between he and John Ryan?
Of course.
No.
Well, his ball goes farther. It's more accurate. He kills it inside the 5-yard line. He can essentially kick it to a player as good as a quarterback can throw it.
I'm not saying that he's not a better punter. I'm saying that if we gave you
I'm saying he's already the best punter
in the world.
The
Pepsi blind taste test challenge. would not be able to tell
I'm
the
saying
difference.
That he is the mixture of an NFL punter with like a trick shot punter who can do anything with his foot and a ball. That's what I'm saying.
Did you ever see the Saturday Night Live skit where Jimmy Fallon is a centaur and he's being interviewed by Christopher Walken?
Yeah.
where they're going through that, that's it would be one of those things where it was like, what did you think about that punt from Michael Dixon? You'd be like, I really loved it. I lied. It was John Ryan that kicked that ball.
I don't think so. Pretty sure I'd be able to tell the difference, but let's not actually test this out so I don't embarrass myself.
All the rest will be sent our question.
What do you think about my idea earlier? If Byron Maxwell's not going to show up for voluntary workouts, does he just get to start at the very beginning of minicamp at right cornerback? Who the heck is Byron Maxwell?
No, and it leads me to believe that if you've got a person that's going to be better than him, he doesn't win ties. He's not at a point where his track record wins ties. If he's significantly better, then yes, eventually start him. But yeah, I would agree with you. If you get to training camp, try out some of the other guys. You've got options there. It's a competitive spot, I think, at right cornerback between Nico Thorpe, the big tall drink of water, Trey Flowers. Mm-hmm. People are overlooking the cornerback, Justin Coleman, that they got from New England last year. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But I don't know that. I mean, look, John brought back up Tom Brady. Okay, fine. Maybe if you're as good as Tom Brady, you can skip OTAs without seeing your job be in jeopardy.
Here's what's happening.
I would just send a message to players. If you want to skip practice, that's fine. They're voluntary. But I can also volunteer to make you the second string cornerback instead of the first stringer.
Here's what's happened with Byron Maxwell. They're like, he's a starting cornerback. We want this salary. The Seahawks are like, well, what's his market value? We're not going to give you that. Well, he's a starting corner, though, and you need to give him more. It doesn't matter what he's worth on the open market. It's what he's worth to you.
Right.
Like, this is what the offer is. Take it or leave it. And he goes, fine, I'm going to take it, but I'm not showing up for the voluntary
It doesn't make
stuff.
Any sense. None of it does. So anyway, all right, let's change this tune here for a minute, because we have done this every single Friday here for the last month or so. I don't think you've been in for
anything. Fan Fiction Friday?
No, in addition to that, open phone lines. We've done this every Friday. We open up the lines, 206-421-3776. You can talk Mariners. Obviously, they have been tremendous. Another win last night. Banking wins, a big win against Tampa Bay. And we'll talk to Manny Acta later in the show. Looking forward to that. You can call in to talk some Seahawks, whether it's Earl Thomas or Byron Maxwell, voluntary workouts, who impressed you, guys you think are going to have a big year, Shaquille moving to left cornerback, the future of the offensive line, Chris Carson looking like a beast, according to Pete Carroll. There's a lot of Seahawks conversation to have. You have the NHL giving out the Stanley Cup last night. You have the NBA, which is about to award its finals, I think, any day now.
What
right?
about Howard Schultz?
Can
someone call and complain about Howard Schultz?
Somebody can.
I would love to have somebody.
Or maybe defend him. I don't know whether people will try. So there's a lot. The idea behind this is, whatever sports argument you've been wanting to make, whether you've been making it to your friends or in a bar, or you've just been thinking about it and you want to try to convince us or our listeners or whomever, anything that's on your mind, we want to hear from you. 206-421-3776. Any call on whatever it is you want to say. And I think the top five board.
Top five.
Do you want to handle the top five board? Do you think you can do that?
Oh, yes. I would love to handle your top five board.
I don't think that'll work. But the top five board
well, can
will
I please
at least
do
be
it?
Out. I don't know. Brock will get mad.
I know.
I don't know that anybody should touch
no
Brock's
one else
board.
Has ever touched that
That's
besides
true.
Brock.
Jim Moore and Issaquah is going to be your number one.
Oh, no. 206-421-3776. Lines are open next on Brock and Salk.